Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Game Audio Podcast. This is episode number 2, and I'm your host, Anton, also co-founder of the Game Audio Podcast. Also joining us today is the other co-founder, Damien.
Hey, guys. Nice to see you today. Welcome to the Game Audio Podcast, episode 2. Be rocking and rolling it.
Also joining is David Steinwiedel. Is that how you pronounce it?
Hi, everybody. Steinwiedel, yeah.
From 2K, and Julian Kwasniewski. I should have asked beforehand. Well, how do you pronounce your name, Julian?
Just like that.
You own
Kwasniewski?
Yeah, that's it. You own
it. All right, so also joining us today is Julian Kwasniewski from BA Sound. And final guest is Kenneth Young from Media Molecule.
That's me. Right. Actually, it's Kenneth Younger.
Jungle.
Not really.
Yeah.
Not really.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, guys. Let's get started real quick with some industry news. Damien, you want to hit it off?
Yeah, the International Game Developers Association announced recently that starting in January of 2010, for U.S. members only, sorry, Kenny, they will be providing healthcare options for members. And so this is a group policy that they are putting out there for their members to join in and be a part of and get reap the discounted member benefits. It's a cool stuff. Nice to see that emerging for people who are just getting started in the industry or freelance. Nice to have that option out there.
Cool. Yeah, well, us over here in Europe have governments that provide nice healthcare and shit, so I'm glad for you Americans.
All right. We just don't get sick.
Suckers.
In other news, RJ DJ was recently updated, and I mentioned that because it's not really a game, but it's closely related to what most sound designers in the game industry are busy with, and that's procedural sound and DSP. And RJ DJ is an iPhone application that allows you to use pure data patches as augmented music. So the idea behind it is that you use the input from the iPhone microphone as a source that gets then filtered and manipulated with delays, whatever you want, in a pure data patch, which is something similar to MaxMSP, only the open source version of it, developed by Miller Bruquette as well, like the original MaxMSP. And they recently updated that to include in-app purchases. So now you can go into the app itself and buy new scenes or just download new scenes straight to the device, which is a major improvement to the usability of it. And I think it's a really cool new development in music that you're going to have this live ambience thing going on. And I try it myself sometimes when I bike in Amsterdam. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like the whole procedural movement. Anything that will enable people to make noise and play with it. I mean, it's good times. Another recent development is the Able Gamers website that focuses on game accessibility has recently launched a review site where they are reviewing current generation games, new games, for their accessibility. They have a few different criteria that they are judging them on: fine motor skills, deaf gamers, one-handed, gross motor, subtitled, and colorblind. One of the cool things about that is that specifically they're focusing on some areas that are of interest to the audio community. If you have, visually impaired or gamers who are interested in seeing the closed captioning on games, this is an interesting way to take a quick look across the industry and see who is working on ways of making their games accessible. And the top game currently, the most accessible according to them, is Dragon Age Origins from BioWare this fall. And one of the cool things that they did is they have a second subtitle option that allows you to see the ambient noises that are going on in the game. And so just it helps to add that closed captioning aspect, brings a little more to people who might be playing without sound. And it's nice to see developers taking advantage of that.
It wouldn't be great if they would share their sort of, if they have had any telemetry data on how many of their users were actually making use of that, because that's the sort of thing where you can mention it to your colleagues that you'd like them to implement it in the game, but it will generally fall on flat ears. But if you can say, you know, that actually 20,000 of our users on our game that shipped a couple of million units actually made use of that, then all of a sudden that's a powerful feature that might look like it might ship a few more copies.
Yeah, or if definitely a few more copies, and also just expand the audience, I think, which is what every developer hopes in the end, is that their game can reach the greatest number of players across as many different areas as possible. You see an initiative over there with Ubisoft, who are also working towards making their games more accessible. Mm. And so I think it's trending toward that. It's nice to see a place like the Able Gamers Reviews, where you can do a quick take on work that's being done in that area.
And also, well, congratulations to the guys at BioWare for that, and to Vance, who I just reminded that Vance originally started basically the game audio community back in, what was it, 2005 with... do you remember that site, Damien? Because that's where we originally met.
I absolutely do remember that site, yeah. It was.
Oh, that's a beautiful story, you guys.
Ah!
Oh, big hug, big hug. Yeah, that was a good time, and Vance over there holding it down at BioWare, I think he's in the Edmonton office, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Right. It's a cool thing.
Also, the gamecareerguide.com site has a game design challenge up that's about building a game that uses music integrally. So the assignment details are, there's been a lot of talk about how the music genre just isn't doing as well as it used to. Yes, Beatles Rock Band is a major hit, and people still love Guitar Hero. DJ Hero hasn't got on, though. It seems that gamers might very well be getting plastic instrument fatigue. Is it any wonder? Years of essentially the same game over and over is wearing people down. Is it all about pushing colored buttons as lights cascade down the screen? As addictive as it is, there's more to music than rock, and there's more to gameplay than timing. Despite the popularity and variety in music, few attempts have been made to marry it to different types of gameplay. We'd like to see that change. Sony's Patapon for the PSP takes the metaphor of battle drums and applies it to a strategy game. Rez HD, on the other hand, marries the beat to a transcendent shooting experience. These games are a great place to start. Think of a way to use music as a core gameplay mechanic, but don't just cast the player as a performing mimic. Bring it in a truly creative, yet still integral way. To submit, you have to check out the site you submitted to. Their email address, your submission should be no more than 500 words. You can put images in there. And most importantly, it needs to be in before Wednesday, December 16th. So by the time this airs, you'll have roughly a week. And the results will be posted the week after that. Well, and then some sad news that EA closed down Pandemic. So over to those people who are now without a job, good luck on finding a new one. I hope you get one soon.
Yep, a lot of good people there, a lot of good sound people, and wishing them well.
Hey, this is Carsten Royan, and you're listening to the Game Audio Podcast.
So that leads us into today's discussion topic, where we'll be focusing on footsteps and Foley in games and interactive. And, you know, we're going to try to get a broad take on what I think is a fundamental in games, footsteps. I mean, a lot of games have them. Some games do them better than others. There's a question on the table whether or not they should have them at all, or to what extent, where we could be improving them. But let's start with maybe some experiences. Does anyone want to share current or past experience with designing sound for footsteps, Foley, implementing strategies?
I thought I might. I've got a really good pun to kick us off, which is, I don't know Jack about Foley. I was like, oh, I'm glad you started laughing. I was worried that no one would get it, but anyway, that's not true. I do know a little about Foley, but it came to me last night when I was thinking about this, and I thought I'd share it with you all.
I liked it.
It's good.
So, I mean, experiences. Maybe Julian, you could talk about some of the first games that you worked on with LucasArts. What was the process there for getting footsteps in the game, or for recording that Foley? What kind of tricks were you pulling off, or how much content were you cramming in? Any insight into that?
It was definitely cramming. I mean, back then it was more limitations on what we, you know, the amount of variation we could get in the game, and sometimes it was really six or so footsteps per surface, if there was even surface differentiation. But, you know, the thing about footsteps, and you mentioning that there's a movement that people would think, that anyone would think that they shouldn't be in there, for any game that you want to have realism, they absolutely need to be there. And, the thing about footsteps for me is it's usually the first tech that's implemented. So, you know, you can hear those things right out of the box. And it's always a great feeling when you record all this stuff and then you go running around and hearing it all. But I think, you know, for me, it's something that I'm constantly, you know, it seems like we're making and recording the same exact footsteps for every single game we work on. And, but, you know, each time they get better and, you know, you learn more things about why some won't work. And, you know, with tools like Wise now, we can add layers and we can really crank up the realism part. And I think that, you know, for me, it's the trick to it is that you are basically creating footsteps that don't sound identical, but yet they don't sound different, because if they're too different, then you get this guy with a peg leg running around. So, you know, it's an element that gets repeated so many times that, you know, if you sit and run around and you really focus on the pitch of the steps, you know, in some cases, one footstep file is better than having four if that's, you know, how it's going to sound. So, but for me, it's all about, it kind of goes hand in hand with ambience and just the immersive quality of it, because I feel like, you know, when we walk around in life, we're not listening, but you're making footstep sounds constantly. So it's a really important, it's an important feature. And it's not just the foot landing on the ground, you know, it's the clothing and, you know, machine gun rattling or whatever you might be wearing.
Yeah, I totally agree with Julian, everything he said there. Damien, you mentioned that it was like, it's often said that people will say, oh, we don't need footsteps because, you know, you never hear them, so what's the point in having them there? And I don't think there's anyone who really says that and means it. I just think it's one of those things that is said because that aspect of it is true. You know, footsteps generally are one of those things, one of those elements in the mix that quite often are covered up by everything else. So maybe the solution there is a dynamic mixing solution. But when it comes to footsteps themselves and the fact that they ground the character in reality, and when you move, you know, it gives you feedback, that's totally what Julian was talking about. And that's essential, because anyone that actually thinks that, just try taking footsteps and Foley out and see how weird the character feels when they just silently float around the place.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Julian and Kenneth both have a point, but I also think that when you're in it, when you're in the thick of it, when you're you know, if you do take it out and you're floating around a game, you know, killing bad guys, getting shelled, doing that stuff with monsters or enemies, the footsteps don't matter at that point. And I think, like Kenneth said, with dynamic mixing, we really have to decide when they should be there and when they shouldn't.
Well, it's more of a priority at that point, you know. If you're not hearing them, obviously, yeah, you. But I think in conditions where you are hearing them, that's really where it counts. But I agree. If it's a big gunfight, you're not going to hear them even if they are in, and nor are you going to be paying attention to them.
Well, and I think that this idea of dynamic mixing is really, you know, for us, I think is sort of becoming old hat to an extent. But in the current generation, you know, dynamic mixing is still a pretty new concept out there as far as the ability to change the mix based on maybe gameplay parameters or states, changing the mix based on even the, you know, dynamic range of the audio coming out of the game. And so I think that this dynamic mixing idea is definitely, you know, a potential solution to the idea of the same four footsteps for 20 minutes on your way across the map in World of Warcraft. You know what I mean? And so I think that that is a good potential direction for it to take. I guess from my perspective, I think that footsteps, I think back to NES games, Commodore 64, you know, early games for me, a lot of times it's very metronomic. It kind of sets the tempo for the game, and in a lot of ways, it drives that in the same way that a kick and snare would in a rock band. And it's not to say that I don't like ambient music, but I do feel like in games that have a forward progression that they do have a place.
But do you think that it makes a big difference if we're talking about, playing a character at least, if we're the first-person character or if we see the character? Because I definitely do feel that in first-person games, sometimes the emphasis on footsteps is a bit too much.
Right.
In the third-person perspective, you have more freedom because you don't feel as connected with that because you're not really there, that character is there. And in a first-person game, you are supposed to be there. So it's kind of weird to hear your own
also
footsteps.
Also, you can't see the feet unless you're playing.
Well, and that's true. And when you can't see the feet, it actually it increases the focus on the cadence of the steps, and it can really fail in those conditions, you know. I also think that mix, you know, not to harp on mix, but I think that a lot of games have the footsteps mix too loud. And I think that there's just a, you know, it's that kind of subtle, it's the subtle implementation of them where they, you know, they provide what they need, but they are not in any, because once you start to notice them, and if you're noticing them constantly and you're not just running around in a silent, you know, no gun battle going on situation, you know, they can definitely detract. So, you know, it is a subtle, even in real life, it's subtle. And, you know, so if you're trying to mimic reality, it's definitely something you want to strive for, the subtlety.
I think that might be another reason why some people hate footsteps is that, certainly going back a few years, they weren't done subtly and they were really in your face. And so some people would get a bugbear about them just being like these really annoying, distracting sounds in the game. Whereas hopefully that's not the case anymore.
Well, that was also back in the day when they first started to use samples, but there was only like a very limited amount of them. So then, I noticed it especially in multiplayer games, because in multiplayer it becomes a big element of the gameplay. In single player, not so much, because I don't think you generally use the footsteps of single player, at least in shooters. First-person shooters, the enemy footsteps are not usually much of a help in the gameplay. But in multiplayer, it's definitely like a telltale of, okay, there's somebody running or walking from there or there.
Yeah, in single player, an enemy has to tell you they're coming. So in multiplayer, people won't do that for you.
True.
But again, I guess you got a game like the Thief series where the footsteps are totally in your face for all the guards because they've got to tell you that they're shuffling about. And it's in no way trying to be realistic. It's just, like Anton says, it's part of the gameplay, which is, again, another use for footsteps.
You know, that actually just reminded me of a, I think it was the Episode 1 game with Big Ape where we had, they had C-3POs running around, and there was literally, like, you'd be fighting and there would be, you know, 20 of them. And we hooked up those footsteps one day to all of them. And it was the most brutal, you know, it was one of those features we had to pull out right away because, it was just hilarious. So, yeah, you know, if you really did, sometimes reality doesn't sound good, you know, it's just like when you see, sometimes when you're driving and you see a sunset that looks like it's special effects, you know.
On a vaguely related note, I thought I'd say that some of the nicest foley that I've heard in any medium is the really, really subtle sounds that C-3PO makes as he moves his arms about. There's these really quiet little motor sounds that are just sort of doing their thing. I just thought I'd mention that.
Well, do you guys think this is, you know, we've been talking about how subtlety is a great thing for footsteps, and I totally agree. I've been playing Halo 3 recently, and there are feet there, but they're barely there. But is part of the problem that games haven't had a lot of dynamic range, so it's very difficult to be subtle with something in your mix.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a valid point.
Yep, fair, absolutely.
Totally.
On the topic of subtlety, then you start to... I think my mind goes immediately towards implementation strategies and how you get both subtlety and diversity out of a system for footsteps and foley that includes, like Julian mentioned, the layering of sounds where you have a layer of foley, maybe multiple layers of foley depending on how much equipment you're carrying, footstep types not only broken out by character but also then by surfaces, of course, how many different ways you can step depending on what kind of game you're making. If you're talking about Assassin's Creed, Mirror's Edge, Prince of Persia, where you're doing all this Parker jumping around from building to building, I think that you're gonna be trending towards, you know, a lot of subtlety and a lot of shifting variability, shifting layers. So what's the furthest you can take something like that, or where can we go with the idea of building a system for footsteps and foley that maybe outside of the mixing conversation accomplishes that level of detail? Like, how detailed do we need to go?
I think ultimately the sort of the thing that determines all this, a lot of it is driven by the complexity of the animation system. And, you know, like, so you, like, how far do you need to go? It's like, well, how subtle is the animation that to the extent that you've got a generic set of footsteps, but like you say, maybe your character can climb stairs, and maybe you want to make a different set of sounds for that compared to just walking on a flat surface. And as soon as you add this other sort of ability in the gameplay that your character can do, that's when you need to evaluate if you need a unique set of sounds for that special kind of movement or animation type. And I think the trend there is for that stuff to get more and more sophisticated, which is why initially, you look at Foley and you think, oh, that's really boring subject, but this isn't going away. And these animation systems are getting more complex. So Foley is, like you mentioned, Assassin's Creed. I imagine in a game where your character interaction is as complex and sophisticated as that, that there must be someone on the audio team there, whose job must have, much of it, maybe not all of it, but much of it must have been to do with the Foley in terms of, you know, deciding what they needed and getting it recorded and editing it and implementing it in the game. So on a big project like that, I think there's already a trend for someone who's starting to specialise in Foley work, which, again, ultimately that comes to the kind of film model where it is someone's job to spot the Foley, supervise the Foley recording session and edit it all and fit it into the reels. So I think that's where it's going. But how complex it actually gets, I don't know.
I think you have to have control outside of the animation system because the animations are so small and separate. They don't give you the whole picture of what's going on. So right. You need some other system in the game or some other way to tell you that, you know, oh, this guy's just turning in circles in place. You know, don't play the footstep sounds now. Or, you know, maybe a system based on velocity where this guy's starting up. Now this guy's right. In a full run. Now he's slowing down. So let's change what's going on based on that.
I'm with you, Dave, and I've seen animation systems that deal a lot with blending between animations, and so depending on where you are in the blend, you know, maybe if you're 80% into the blend, it won't fire off the sound, but if, you know, you hit that other 20%, then it will play it. You know, so yeah, I echo what you're saying about having control outside of the animation system to be able to make those choices from a sound perspective, because it's animation driving. And I think, Kenny, you're right that really that does start to lay down the determination of how intricate it's going to get, how detailed it's going to get. And I think that from a sound perspective, you still need to have control outside of that animation system, like you're saying, David.
That's something that I actually found I was wanting to sort of learn from you guys, because in Little Big Planet, there basically isn't any animation. You've got the character which moves around, but otherwise, anything that moves in a level is set up as part of the sort of user-created content where they specifically tell it to do something. So we haven't had to invest in any kind of animation, audio, implementation tools. But something that I've been doing recently over the past year is we're going to be releasing a water add-on for the game. So, you know, you add water and your character can swim around in it and the objects interact with the water. And all of a sudden, just all those character water interaction sounds, which you might not think of as Foley traditionally, but actually it's, you know, it's character interaction. So I was recording a bunch of water sounds, you know, at home in the bath with my rubber duckies, which was a lot of fun. But I guess my point is that I was reminded of that when you started talking about blending, because that's where it was like audio bug central for me, because there's animations which essentially, as far as you're visually concerned, aren't there, but they're technically still playing in the animation system. So I was interested in your guys' solutions to dealing with that, and you start talking about percentages of how much of the animation is playing and stuff. So that kind of answers my question, but I just find that really interesting.
The other thing that's adding to the animation, of course, is in because you were talking about blending is physics, because on my previous project was physics and animation were being blended for character fall downs and drops and everything. So it was not just a matter of making the animations work, but also tuning the physics impacts of things. So things like footsteps would be special, would not be tied into animation, but actually be tied in to the physics layer and be a special
some kind of
material.
Procedural calculation of whether a sound needs to play or not.
And it was just determined whether the actual foot hit a particular material, and it would be a collision between the footstep material and the actual material that the foot was hitting. Okay. So in there, the good thing about it is that you're always sync. And the bad thing about it is that you're always sync, because you know, sometimes the animation doesn't generate the most pleasing sounds, and there is sometimes very little you can do about it.
Yep.
Right. So I think that idea of having a control system for sound outside of these other systems like animation or physics, where you have the ability to set thresholds, right? You can say, well, if it's over this percentage, do this. If it's in between, do nothing. If it's less than that, then take a coffee break. You know, I think that that's where these external controls for sound-specific behavior kind of come into play.
Right, and that's not just something that's useful in an animation system. Any kind of threshold-triggered audio event is a really, really powerful tool for allowing you to like mask transitions and just generally survey sort of using the audio system data. Like if a certain sound's getting played several times in a given period of time, you know from that you might want to mix in another sound. So without having to ask a programmer to tell you what a given game variable is doing, just by analyzing the other sounds in the game, it tells you so much and it gives you the flexibility to add other sounds in there. And that's something which I've done a little bit.
Have you got an example of that? Because I'm not sure I completely understand it.
Oh, okay, so like in Little Big Planet with the physics audio, when say you've got some metal objects hitting the ground, when you've got a couple of them doing it, it sounds great. It's just like, you know, click, clack, great. But when you've got 10 metal objects all hitting and bashing around, those click, clacks sound rubbish. Because in the real world, when you have lots of sound hitting each other, it's a lot more complex than just 10 one-shot sound events being played a lot, right?
Especially with metal, yes, yes.
Sure. So what I do is when over, I don't know, X frames, if there's X impacts of a certain velocity, energy, can't remember the word right now, then I fade in this what I call a group sound, which is this chaotic sound of metal stressing.
Ah.
So it's quite abstract, but what it generally, when you've got a load of impacts happening, visually, that's a chaotic scene. So when you mix in this chaotic metal stress sound, it just helps it stop sounding so rubbish.
that's interesting. We did one of the cool things for the downloadable content we did for Killzone 2. There was a level which had rain in it, and we didn't have rain in the game you buy, the disc. So it was new, and
it was DLC stuff.
Yeah, it was a DLC level, and the interesting part about it was that we actually managed to have physics impacts for every raindrop. So, so what we did was we had like different raindrops for different materials like metal and all that stuff. But of course, I didn't want to like have 2,000 samples in there. So the same thing actually that you were talking about, I did add some background rain to the ambient. And then in conjunction with the spatialized and localized raindrops hitting a metal here, the glass there, the wood there, the water there, it really like created a very nice effect of a lot of rain with really nice perspective. So yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, but I guess that was my point, is like, you know, that is definitely applicable to an animation system where you're looking at what's going on and allowing you to trigger other stuff and make it all sound awesome. But, you know, that expands to a bunch of other audio stuff in games, potentially.
Yeah.
If you start to think about stuff in that way.
Yep, and what you just explained with the way that you handled thresholds in physics, I think piggybacks on the talk you did at GDC this year, which was an awesome talk, covering a lot of Little Big Planet audio, but specifically you drilled down and had some great examples of that. It'd be great to see those examples in the wild someday.
They are already on YouTube, because one weekend I was proactively sort of thinking, right, I'm going to write this up this weekend, and I only got as far as converting the videos and getting them on YouTube.
All right, so this is it. I like that one.
Yeah, it's less abstract. Other stuff is like tearing when you get cloth, whereas that is like stones. It's wood.
I gotta love the way your test levels look, man. They look a lot better than mine.
They are pretty. There we did go. something quite similar to this on BioShock 2, where there were scripted moments in the game where, you know, physics objects would do their thing. You know, something would get blown up and a bunch of rubble would come down, and on top of the basic physics sounds, you know, the single hits. Yeah. You know, we throw in a big group impact and a big group, you know, debris fall to really help sell it and sweeten it.
Yeah, so it's like you've got your awesome group sound, and then you've got the detail of a specific thing which is hitting the ground at a certain point in time, getting scored by the physics system.
Mm-hmm.
It's very cool.
Going right back to the dynamic mixing thing, sometimes, you know, for one of these, since we have a lot of scripted events, you know, we can cheat a lot. And sometimes the physics sound didn't work, so we would just remove that sound from the mix and put in, you know, our own, you know, override.
Yeah. Awesome. That's a nice capability to be able to do that.
Yes, it is. And much thanks to Guy Somberg, our audio programmer, who made us a fantastic mixing.
Sweet. Yeah, we need more peoples like him masterminding those kind of systems. For sure,
we do. Every team could really use a dedicated audio programmer. It's I think our greatest resource to getting great sound, you know, coming out of the games.
I'm with you,
100% agree.
It's no interesting doubt. on the physics side. One of the things that we did with the Saboteur was to take the physics impacts and systems that we made for things like, you know, rocks and wood and, you know, objects hitting other objects on different surfaces, and extrapolated that into a debris system. So it was using all of the same content as the impacts, except we were doing delay offsets with layering of this content to add these kind of, you know, bigger sounds that are really just a combination of several impacts, right? Your hero sound for an explosion debris is usually just a combination of impacts. It's sexy in Hollywood and whatnot. But we were able to take implemented single hit impacts that we were using for objects and then, you know, apply that to a layered delay offset sweetener for explosions,
right,
and got a lot of mileage out of that.
Is that hard coded? Because like in Little Big Planet, that physics sound that comes in there, I can set it up back end, but it's a hard coded system that applies only to physics audio. I think the ultimate sort of implementation tool is to be able to just take any old two sounds in the game and specify the parameters you want to allow to trigger another sound. I would love that tool. That would, like, I'd go nuts with that.
That's something I've been wanting for a long time. I think I've just been evaluating Wise, and I do think they have something where you can use one sound to control others.
Right.
Or control the behavior of others. So I don't know how deep it goes, but it's there.
I'm sold on that. I'd love that.
Yes, using one sound to be able to turn off another sound is a great, great thing. And you don't have to go back to the programmers and say, I need a new message that turns off this sound in this situation.
I think that's something we have to come back to when we go to Battlefield, when we play the Battlefield audio. Because in Battlefield, the mixing is done based on the priority of the sounds. So there's a lot going on with what they call the high dynamic range audio. I don't know if you guys heard any of their engine stuff, but they've been working a lot on getting the most out of the limited dynamic range of consumer speakers.
Right. Well, I know, is it Stefan over at EA that set up the high dynamic range audio? I can't remember the chap's name at DICE who helped set that stuff up, but we can edit that back in. Like one example he's got is looking at the number of bullets that are being fired out of a gun over a certain period of time, and then turning down the gun sounds if you know the player is just holding their finger on the trigger.
Exactly. Right?
And what's really nice about their system is that, okay, I've done that in games before, but it was hard coded, whereas they actually have their system to be able to set that up and control stuff. So that is that is awesome.
That's great. I've had a system like that before where we actually, any sound could have your traditional ADSR curve applied to it. So we did the same thing. If there was a machine gun that was just had the trigger on, you know, it would duck after a while.
Yeah. That's really powerful too. One thing I thought of was it was interesting that we started talking about physics audio, because that made me think of, I suppose, we started out by talking about Foley in terms of footstep and like cloth moves, which is like the basic way of thinking about it. But actually, it covers a whole load of stuff that includes object interaction. So even if we're talking about the use of Foley in a feature film, the Foley artist, you know, they're not just doing the character movements; they're doing basically anything that the characters interact with, or you know, and that character could be a robot and it's making these clicky clacky sounds, or it could be someone picks up something, and all that stuff, which is starting to get into sound effects territory, really. So it's interesting we were talking about physics audio, because have any of you guys used Foley artists as the source material, or the originators of the source material for your physics audio systems?
Well, yes. We definitely we've done it. And the problem is that classic Foley folks will you know, if a true physics engine is doing it, you know, the files themselves don't really sound that great outside of the, you know, the engine manipulated results that you get.
Right.
And so it's a real trick to try and we do this stuff ourselves now because we know what we need to do, but it's hard because, you know, you're used to scoring you know, a 20-second scene, and but you know, if you have boulders dropping from a cliff and it's all being handled by a physics engine, then you know, you those sounds just are, I mean, it's always hard to deliver them honestly because they sound so bad.
Well, they're like they're componentized audio in the game, whereas a Foley artist used to, like, say, performing to picture. So
yeah, exactly.
You're not looking for the same source material, are you? You're looking for those itsy bitsy little sounds you want to be able to get the game to do its thing, versus someone wrestling with something to make it perform its picture. And that's kind of what I was interested in talking about, because similarly, I've had exactly the same experience. And in a cutscene, of course, a professional Foley artist will do better work than I can and quicker. But when it comes to the in-game interactive stuff, it's not necessarily a waste of time. I think if you can give the Foley artist instructions in what you want, then they can still help. But it's just not... It gets to that dangerous territory where you're kind of like, I can do this better than you. Give me the damn props.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is interesting. But yes, that's all I have to say about that. I think there's a lot to be learned from Foley artists. They do have a wealth of experience, especially the ones that have been doing it for, like, you know, their whole career. And they've got amazing tips and tricks, you know, for all the way they get their special sounds. So the famous one, of course, is like cornstarch for snow footsteps. But they've got loads of stuff up their sleeves, which I think if you've never worked with a Foley artist before, it is well worth paying that money just to spend an afternoon with them, even if it is just on cutscenes. Because you'll just learn so much stuff. I've certainly found that really useful, just in giving me ideas. It's not necessarily just like stealing a trick. It's like it just helps you think about the sound in a slightly different way. You know, you're not naively trying to reproduce an action by recording the same object in your studio. You're like, okay, I need to make this more badass in the studio so that it sounds cool in the game. Mm-hmm. Just little sort of things like that.
It's also a lot of fun when working with them to give them stuff that you wouldn't think a Foley artist would traditionally do. You know, you don't have to limit it to character interactions or what have you. You know, if there's a car crash, put it in the cue sheets, and you'd be amazed sometimes what they'll come up with.
Yeah.
It's, I guess it's the sound designer's version of what's happening with the sample libraries for musicians.
Right. They're taking our jobs.
Yeah, but then again, it's been going on for so long that you'd think they'd be out of a job by now. But, you know, we want the 24-bit 96 versions next year, and then, you know.
Well, the thing is they can do it a lot faster than we can sitting in front of a computer. I mean, I don't know how many times you've had to cut footsteps into a cutscene, but after a while, you just start screaming at the machine saying, "God, gosh darn it, I know a Foley artist could do this in 10 seconds, and it's taken me 10 minutes.
It's the worst. There's nothing worse than doing that.
Trying to cut cloth or subtle movement is just, it's not worth it. It's not worth your time.
Yeah, you just feel like an idiot. Like, what am I doing?
It gets to a point where if you do it a lot, you would set up your sample, your sampler, and have the footsteps ready at the keyboard. And you can get pretty decent results like that pretty fast.
You can, but then your character turns and, oh, you need a scuff and you got to change your sample sets. Or, you know, I don't know how you have it set up. Or they move surfaces or they put on different shoes. And a Foley artist just has them all, boop, 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 sitting right there. And they really are great. You know, they're dancers. They perform that stuff.
It's definitely. I can't wait to get an opportunity to see somebody in action who did that. There's actually a video. I hope I can find it. I just did a quick search of a famous German... Grausmacher, as they're called over there, the sound creators, and he did the Neverending Story, the original one, mm-hmm. And he would do a whole movie sitting down and never getting off his chair, and he would have all his props within his arm's reach, and he had like a table with all the surfaces, and he would do the footsteps with his hands or with his feet or... You know, he'd have literally all kinds of closets within hand reach. So that would be definitely the most efficient sound designer for cutscenes.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people. Even Gary Rydstrom has always, he uses his mouth for a lot of sounds. And it's crazy. Like, if you, you know, if you can get, you can imitate sound pretty effectively if you, you know, what you're doing.
Is somebody making noises there?
I heard a helicopter.
Well, so on the other side of this, though, now what do you guys make of the idea of bringing some of these common sounds like footsteps, physics, into the procedural realm and synthesizing these or generating these procedurally? Any experience with that or any ideas on where that might be headed? Certainly, Wise with their SoundSeed plugins is leading the pack, I feel like, with game audio in trying to bridge what I think has become or what has been kind of a clinical Max MSP PD lifestyle into the real world usability, I can do this kind of thing.
Well, there's that. But there's also the thing that Anton touched on when he was talking about the physics system sorry, Anton, I can't remember. Was it characters falling over?
Yeah, for example, yeah.
For example, yeah. So you've got like the procedural calculation of stuff, and then you've got the actual procedural generation of the audio, right? And the crossover for me really is when we'll call it animation, gets so complex that it's basically just modeling stuff realistically in inverted commas, then that's the point where you're like, hey, can we use that to control some procedurally generated sound? That's the way I think about it, because that's like you're piggybacking on top of another system, so you might as well take advantage of that.
You already have all this realistic data, you already are modeling reality,
right? So I suspect that does the procedural audio generation a favor. Surely more information is good in that sense. But where I think it's slightly pointless is if you've just got your character who's walking along and you've got these footsteps. If the footsteps are just, you know, if they're nothing other than the fact that the game says left, right, left, right, left, right, where's the benefit in using a procedurally generated foot system other than perhaps the old one of trying to avoid repetition?
Sure. I think you can get the variance out of it. You can get that you know, to cut down on the repetition if you're, you know, synthesizing a new footstep every time. Certainly, you could get information about the player's weight, maybe, you know, character
or,
type.
Or other gameplay elements. I mean, you could use any game parameter for that. I mean, how spooky is it? So maybe our enemy should sound more spooky today than did it yesterday. Or maybe his little buddy just said a very, very immature joke. So we want to make him sound a bit more juvenile in his footsteps. I mean,
I think that's the other like powerful thing which determines whether you think, right, we need to be doing this stuff procedurally. Is like you say, something that come on, brain. something that just makes you think, with this input, we can control this, and I cannot do this with samples, or at least it's a total pain in the ass with samples. Therefore, procedural is the way forward.
I mean, one of the main main advocates for procedural sound is Andy Farnell, and I mean, I can't help but drop his name in this discussion right now, because his argument for using procedural audio, and I'm sorry if I get this wrong, is that at some point we're gonna get to the stage where we want this amount of detail that it's no longer efficient to create waveforms for it, and especially I think when we start to take into consideration all the different gameplay elements that are so variable, and in some games mean never ending. Think of Little Big Planet as an example of that, because everything changes depending on who created the level. So
well, I know it.
Yeah. So and when you get to the situation where you actually want to have the sounds be completely dependent on that, then you're going to have to do it procedurally. But right now, we're not really there yet with the amount of detail that we want to put in our games, apparently, because otherwise we would have it already.
I guess there's an awkward crossover point where we need the tech, and we've identified that we need the tech, but we don't have it, and we've not spent any years investing in making it awesome. So that's why I think the sort of baby steps that Wise are taking with their SoundSeed and the new one that you mentioned in the last podcast that I can't remember is really cool.
Yeah, the
really
Impact
cool.
one, or the Swoosh one. The Swoosh one.
Swoosh, yeah.
Definitely. And they're working on both levels. What Andy's doing, I don't know if you've read his book, but it's a pretty cool book. Part of it is a PD tutorial, and the other half is interesting techniques. And it's the higher end of it. I mean, it's the thinking about it in the lower level mathematics of getting this stuff synthesized. And
which I guess that goes back to what Damien's saying about like taking it away from the max PD paradigm and making it something usable for someone like me.
Yeah. Now the other example outside of Wise that I can think of is EA has had a procedural tool for a long time. I saw a talk that Paul Gorman did as part of the IESD at Dolby in San Francisco, and Jay White was on staff there talking about how he procedurally generated sounds for the cape on Bartman for the Simpsons game. And, you know, that's pretty far out, man. That's pretty wild that you're going to go through all that to procedurally generate sound with a custom proprietary tool made by
EA. So was
it
custom, or was it backed based on the implementation of PD they have that they developed for Spore? I don't know whether EA share their tech much in that regard, but
they have a special implementation of PD?
Yeah. Wow. The score in Spore was, you know, procedurally generated in PD, in real time, for some parts of the game that needed it. There was a talk at GDC 2 years ago about that. And that kind of blew my mind. That was really cool. That's like one of those things that, like, you know, I'd always talked about as being awesome, but didn't expect it to actually happen. And so that was interesting. That's why I was just wondering whether it's interesting that you said it was...
it's a custom tool, and as far as where it gets its roots, I don't really know. Having never worked with it, I don't know how much of it is from that PD library, if any.
We're going to have to invite somebody from EA and get that information and get binaries.
I know I've seen them talk about it both on both for Spore and for they used it for the physics on the Simpsons game. That might have been the same talk. And I don't know if that's the game,
so I'm going to have to play it tonight now.
I don't know if it's the same implementation or if they have they just sort of develop them in parallel.
Well, I guess the interesting thing is the Spore stuff, I guess, didn't do any of the DSP side of stuff. It was purely using the MIDI manipulation aspect of it, whereas it sounds like if it is the same tool that the Simpsons stuff would be actually using, you know, proper DSP number crunching stuff, which is very cool.
There's a great video that we'll link to on the Game Audio Podcast website that has Brian Eno and Will Wright talking about that procedural music system. It's really fascinating, Kenny. I think that you're hitting on it there as far as, you know, where that could potentially go, and certainly Spore led the way with procedural animation as well as procedural music.
I'm not against. I had a bit of training at university for using Max, and I've dabbled in PD, so I'm not against the idea. Just thinking about, you know, how busy I am generally in my job.
Well, you're just one guy. You just got your second chair, man.
Well, yeah, no, I got another guy now. Yeah.
Okay, well, you know.
Jeremy.
Tell him you want and make him do it. That's what they do to me.
I hope I don't just give Jeremy all the rubbish tasks. I'd like to think I'm a better...
Who did you end up getting for the second chair?
Jeremy Main, who used to be at BlackRock in Brighton, the Disney racing studio.
Okay.
And he was previously at Criterion in Guildford. So he's lived in Guildford before, so he's a local lad. So,
well, going back to the question that Damien asked, assuming that we can make the sounds and make them good procedurally, we still run into all the same problems that we have with samples, which is that, you know, if we have an animation-based footstep system, you know, how do we tell it this is the start of a move, the end of a move? You know, we basically still have the same problems. You know, we've got less sound files, but how do we make them work correctly?
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
And the whole procedural thing is definitely something that's going to come up in a future episode. I hope we're going to get somebody from Wise and Andy.
Get Andy on
that,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely want to have Andy on that show.
Yep.
And then of course, if you're in a first-person game that doesn't actually have any feet, well, then you can't procedurally generate anything. So you got to build a whole other system just to make sounds.
Yeah, well, that system could trigger things.
Well, now you just blew my head right there. Somebody without feet.
How would there that are work? No, it's just two arms with guns. You know, there's nothing working behind the camera usually.
This is brilliant.
I had one more comment about Foley stuff as well, which is when I did my homework. I hope you're impressed. I had to think about this stuff last night, but there's something that I've always been struck by is that of all the other people on the development team, my colleagues who have tended to actually pay any attention to what I'm doing on a regular basis is the animators, because a good animator knows that without the audio, their creation is, you know, kind of neutered, because the audio really helps sell the subtlety of movement and stuff. So those guys are often, it's kind of role reversal, if you like, because normally it's us who are like relying on someone else to make our stuff sound good by implementing it for us. But an animator like needs us to help their animation look cool. So I thought that was interesting.
I totally agree. And, you know, I utilize testers and, you know, I meet with level designers and, you know, they create all this material with pretty specific reference that they've, you know, referenced. And, I couldn't agree with you more. It's the problem is they may not just have they just don't have the, a lot of them don't have the audio prowess to say what they're trying to say, just like,
right,
you know,
they don't have the language and they can't articulate what they're hearing.
Exactly. And I couldn't animate something to save my life. So, but that's a great point.
All right. Well, yeah, I guess that wraps up our discussion of Foley. And
goodbye, Foley.
What?
I said what? Goodbye, Foley.
Oh, bye, Jack.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, no. My fault
hit
for listening.
Hit the road, Jack. Don't come back.
Oh, all right. Now it's time for a little sound.
Was that the sound?
Was that it? Silence?
No, that was me.
Are you trying to do your John Cage point here, Anton?
Ha ha.
Oh, you guys didn't hear anything there, huh?
No.
Sorry.
Let me try this again.
Man, that's a classic.
Yeah, that's the sound of the Stuka. You, 78, 87. I just said 78. Anyway, my German is rusty. Doesn't really matter. It's the Second World War bomber. And I was under the impression that the sound from like the bombs going down was, or the diver going down, was actually generated by the plane. But it turns out there's actually a siren on the plane bomber to scare the people. Some more.
That's some awesome Nazi sound design there.
Yeah, totally. You're about to get whooped.
Well, it's interesting because there was a whole movement before the Second World War, the Futurist movement. It was an art movement. Mm. And they did a lot with creating sounds of the weather and, of course, the stuff that, you know, the early sound designers for the theater did. But they took it much further and made, like, music out of it. Like,
yeah, it's way cool.
Yeah. And of course, also it.
Unless you heard it.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah.
Cool. So, sound of the week that's a nice thing to have around. Just gives us a chance to highlight something that's interesting and pontificate a little bit on. Yeah, the sound of our world. I think.
I think you've set quite a high bar there. That's going to be.
Yeah.
You know. I pride myself on my geeky sound knowledge, and I didn't know about that, so...
Actually, I didn't know about this either until an AI coder sent me this link this morning. So they always send me cool sound links, right? So there. What you guys have with the animators, that's the kind of relationship I have with my dear neighbors, AI coders.
Yeah, so to our listeners out there, if anyone has ideas for Sound of the Week, things that are cool, that you're experiencing... that you've read about, that you know about, we'd love to hear about them. Give us an email at inbox@gameaudiopodcast.com.
Definitely. Any feedback is welcome there.
So this last month, I participated in an audio roundtable panel at the IGDA Wisconsin chapter meeting. About a half dozen regional audio professionals were on hand to discuss topics like iPhone audio, interactive mixing, tools and middleware, and accessibility. Specifically, what I'm highlighting on the show tonight, and we'll be linking to the whole discussion at the Game Audio Podcast website, but in a discussion on middleware, which kind of ties into our Episode 1 podcast, each of the panel members shared their opinions and experiences working with different tool sets, and we'd like to roll a few quotes from that and maybe get some feedback.
I have blind faith in Audio Kinetic Wise. Basically staked my life on whether or not we should switch over to that, and the fact that we're using Audio Kinetic Wise makes my life infinitely easier.
I worked at a studio that had their own proprietary game engine, which was so crude to be working with in 3D. I mean, in order to have a sound in the game, it had to be placed on an object, and that object had to be animated.
My first job working with integrating sound was with Bizarre Creations on Project Gotham Racing 4 in the club. And they have a dedicated 4-man audio programming team at their studios. They have built this incredibly robust sound engine. They can do amazing things.
And so I think when you talk about the idea of standards, first of all, we don't have many standards in audio.
We should.
At least from a game side. We should, and I think middleware is maybe leading that charge.
At High Voltage, been using proprietary tools. Most recently, finished up the conduit for Nintendo Wii using those tools. And it's interesting because you have people at your disposal on the team who, if your tool doesn't have a X feature, you can go and talk to the programmer or dev, and they might possibly add that feature to the tool set, which is a really awesome thing to have.
Was that talking about working with middleware or working with people on your team who program stuff?
He specifically was talking about working with proprietary software. So proprietary audio middleware.
Oh, audio.
Yep.
I generally have only ever worked with middleware, so I'm not the best person to comment there. I mean, we use FMOD at Media Molecule, and we have a dedicated audio programmer, Matt Willis, and he's a pleasure to work with, and that makes my life a lot easier. But when I used to work at Sony, we used their Scream tool, which is almost middleware in the sense that it's generally used by first-party Sony studios, but it's shared amongst them. So it is proprietary tech, but it wasn't tech that it originated in the studio I was working in. So it was essentially middleware. But my only other input on that is that looking at like the Frostbite engine, high dynamic range audio stuff, if you have proprietary tech, it can obviously be really awesome.
Yeah, I think that was part of the discussion, is kind of trying to understand, you know, when you're going for something very specific with the design of the audio for your game, there is definitely a call for proprietary. And there are a couple other good quotes from that panel, you know, on both sides of the coin. Certainly we're enabled with middleware towards a higher standard of audio than people who rely on maybe a game engine's default audio, the Unreal out-of-the-box
right
vanilla audio, or Hero Engine, Unity. These are, you know, very primitive compared to what's being offered by audio middleware manufacturers like Wyze and FMOD, and to an extent, Miles or iSACT. And so,
which is interesting because traditionally, I mean, back in the day, there wasn't as much choice with audio middleware, or at least, you know, really good stuff. And proprietary stuff was just as likely, or probably more likely, to be really sucky than to actually be really awesome. But what we're talking about here is really awesome proprietary stuff, and that actually, if you want to go beyond, like you're saying, if you want specific solutions, then that does need to be proprietary, because you can't wait around a year for Wyze or FMOD to add it.
Right.
And of course, the problem discussing proprietary stuff is that other people don't generally talk about their stuff as much.
Sure.
So I did hear some stuff about particular engines being able to do real-time convolution and, you know, a lot of higher-end stuff that a lot of, as far as I know, middleware right now can't do, but that people, because it's not a sales pitch, you know, you don't go to a gamer and say, well, we have real-time convolution reverbs and expect to sell any more units. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think saying we've got like 5.1, 7.1, whatever, DTS, Dolby, blah, 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 is about as techy as you can go with high-end features.
Yeah. I think the other important thing that makes me think of is cross-platform support, you know?
Definitely.
Personally, I've only ever worked on, at Sony, it was obviously all Sony platforms, and at Media Molecule, because we're published by Sony, so I'm only working on the PS3. I've not had to worry about that. But yeah, that must be a huge consideration for a developer when they're looking at whether they want to roll their own tech or have middleware, is the headache of supporting multiple platforms.
Well, yeah, that's why it's very nice. You know, we do something similar to what Kenneth does, is, you know, we have FMOD, but then we have a programmer to write ourselves custom tools. And so, you know, it's great being able to start out with, you know, they provide the low level mixer and technology to integrate with, you know, whatever platform you're working on. But then at the same time, we can just write whatever we need, you know, customize a mixing engine or a physics engine or whatever it is to perfectly fit our game.
Kenny was kind enough to give us a little bit of unreleased Little Big Planet music. So now I'm just going to have to play it for you guys.
Let me explain, please. So in the first podcast, you at the end of it, you guys pleaded on your knees for some audio content to play, just for like, just to be cool. And I obviously can't send you stuff that I've already written that isn't out yet because it's secret. And I can't really send you stuff that's already out because then I need to get permission and it's nasty. So what I sent you guys was a piece of audio that I did that got canned. It was a trailer for some DLC at the start of the year. And just to set the scene, the audio you'll hear isn't just the music, it's actually all the audio from the trailer, so there's a bunch of sound effects in there as well. But to set the scene, it's a catwalk, and there's various people walking down it, and then it all breaks down because someone comes on and ruins the party, but then Solid Snake comes on, and that's why you hear the encounter theme from Metal Gear Solid, and then it all ends up happy ever after in the end.
Thanks for that.
That's all right. I just hope it encourages other people to send some stuff in. Don't be shy. Let's hear your music and audio and stuff.
Definitely. All right, so in this week's playroom, we have Battlefield 1943, which is a first-person shooter, one of my favorite games that has come out lately. It's an online multiplayer shooter. It's only played online, only played multiplayer. And as last week's Uncharted 2, we have a 5.1 surround MP3 that's hosted on our site. So if you want to take a listen to how the game sounds, and then I suggest you download it. So to recap, the idea of the playroom is to listen to a game stripped away from its visuals and gameplay elements and to really focus in on its sounds. And this is an experiment, so we're going to see how this second effort will end up. So I'm just going to play a little bit. I don't have like a really good example picked out in front, but because the game is so awesome, I think we can just get away with playing part of it, and something cool will come up really soon. So one of the things that I noticed playing this game, or actually listening to this game and analyzing it, is that they, for the subwoofer channel, they only use synthesized signs, which is of course not the first time somebody does that, but it's definitely something I don't see in a lot of games that people create specific LFE content. And I think when you're listening to it in 5.1, at least, it really gives it a lot of impact. So
yeah, that was one of the first things that I noticed as well, was all of the crazy synthesis going on. It was really interesting addition to the mix. What were they calling those?
That was on the tinnitus effect from an explosion, right? When you went into that, I'm assuming that's what it was. That's what it felt like when I was hearing it.
Yes, exactly.
That was like they obviously do their low pass filter, but then they play this one shot kind of synthetic thing over the top, which sounded pretty awesome.
You know, I also, the thing I noticed right off the bat was definitely all the synth tones, but the VO that's happening around the battlefield, I imagine, really sounds good. And it's, you know, there's no proximity to it, and it's something that I think, again, adding to the immersion, if someone's 15 yards from you, you know, they should sound like it. And getting that EQ and little subtle, worldizing to it is really, I really thought it sounded good.
Yeah.
There's a nice little slap on the dialogue call there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Really helps sell it.
The way they did that was, at least the way they made it so that it's clear that it's distant, because the thing that you can make a wave sound distant, but then how do you make it sound distant in the mix is a different story, in my experience at least. And then the way they did it, I guess, is by having the center channel be dedicated to dialogue only, and playing it, even if it's just softly, just the dialogue in there, so you get, you know, you have the space for the reverb on it. At least the fingers.
I've got a question, which was it was partly because I was looking at the waveform whilst I was watching it in SoundForge, but the first 5 minutes was like half the volume of the rest of the clip that you sent. Was that, were they both those, was it all in game, or was any of that cutscene?
It's all in game, but it's been 2 weeks since I recorded it, and I'm and I just have to remember. I'll have to look back at my notes to verify that I did record it at the exact same amplification settings.
The other thing that struck me was, I thought it, if you'd played that to me a few years ago, I probably wouldn't have believed that it was a game. It sounds really slick, and in particular, certainly in that first 5 minutes, which is maybe why I thought it might be in a cutscene, was the vehicle sound like absolutely awesome.
I think in the first minutes you're actually in a vehicle, and that might explain the big difference in volume, because the
because all the other environmental sounds are
become
glass. But I thought the vehicle sounded great. I don't know what they're obviously doing, something a bit more sophisticated than just crossfading there. There's a lot of really nice engine chugging going on. I'm not sure if it was a tank or it was a truck.
I think it's a tank, yeah.
Yeah, it was sweet. I appreciated that.
The interesting thing is that you have different perspectives. You can go from the inside to the outside of the tank, and it'll sound really different. And they add, when you go into the outside, you have much more of the foley, I guess, the rattling of the track going across.
And there was a few bits where the foley was similarly really nice, and I was wondering whether there's a few set pieces where someone runs up to you or something like that, because there was an occasional bit where someone would run up to you and shout something at you, like someone. I know there's a bit that's definitely in game, which was at the 17 minute mark. I made a note that the foley and the breathing was really nice. I'm pretty sure it was in game because it was like,
it's all in game because it's multiplayer.
I didn't mean that. My bad. What I meant was, it was the player character.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like a linear sequence of someone maybe running up to you. There's another bit which I didn't know that time down. Like the foley was so good, I was thinking that it wasn't.
You're talking about the part when they yell grenade. It's sort of near the end.
Right.
But I guess you didn't hear what you were talking about, or?
No, I didn't note that time down. You did hear, like, there was some footsteps and breathing there, which was really nice. There was another section, maybe I can find it for you and tell you it later.
Yeah.
But, the Foley was
we'll
just, like, so good.
You're hearing it.
Yeah, pretend you're hearing it now. The Foley was so good, I thought maybe it was a little linear sequence of someone running past you or something, because it was just so sweet.
Yeah, no, there's no linear sequences in this, because it's all multiplayer, so...
All right, well, there you go. Well done.
One of the things that they do with the Foley, which is why I talked about mentioned it in the Foley discussion, the sound of when you start running, when you put on the boost so that you start running fast, that's when they put emphasis in the mix on your running, your gear, and your breathing,
right.
and your footsteps. And mm-hmm. other than that, you don't really hear it. At least I never noticed it, so they did a good job on it.
Yeah, I think back to the idea that Kenny was getting across about how realistic it sounded compared to a couple of years ago, for instance. With this playroom and the Episode 1 Uncharted 2 playroom, I think that what we're generally starting to see is more and more of a cinematic presentation to the audio with the coming of dynamic mixing, with the increased sample resolution and all of the magic coming out of the box. I think you're just starting to see the line really blur between what game audio is and what consistent audio is, whether it's film, television, or otherwise. And that's, I tell you, it's great to be blurring that line. It's great to have that.
I said to Damien beforehand that I thought that this was probably even better with the visuals because, you know, a lot of that stuff may sound abstract at times, which is, you know, but removed from the visuals. But I would imagine that seeing the whole thing really makes, it gives it the full impact.
Well, that's definitely something actually we're going to change in the future of the podcast, is that I think we should have the visuals of the capture there as well. We tried it now with the experiment of just the audio twice, and I noticed in both discussions because I know both games because I did the captures, tend to refer to what's going on a lot.
I think it is like an interesting exercise to listen to it without the visuals, but you're right.
Yeah.
I think when we start talking about it, it's kind of like we don't really know what we're talking about a lot of the time because we're missing the context.
It might be nice, you know, it's a longer piece to be able to do this, I would imagine, but if you had a clip that you listened to first and then saw the visuals with it, it might be cool to, you know, you'd have little memories of what you heard, and then you'd see it all of a sudden, see it with the intended audio. So,
I like that idea. Well, I think we should try that for the next episode.
Cool. It's a beautifully developing thing. I'm really glad that you guys have been able to be a part of it. It's great to have these discussions.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yes, thank you guys.
Thanks, and thanks also to everybody who sent their feedback and who listened to it, because I was quite surprised that we got quite a few listeners and almost exceeded my bandwidth allowance, so keep it up.
Let's blow through it.
Yeah,
this time,
right? Definitely. This month I want to see that site go down.
So is the plan for this to be a monthly podcast?
The plan is bi-weekly, but it all depends on Damien and I's crunch roster.
I'll bet. Well, if you can keep that up, to be honest, even if it was once a month, that's still a pretty big commitment, right? Just finding those couple of hours where you can record it and then, you know, spend another hour or two editing it down. So if you can, if you're able to do that, that's awesome. So I wish you luck in that, because I look forward to listening to the future episodes.
Thank you.
Cool, thanks.
We look forward to making them.
Huzzah!
And I hope you guys will be able to join us again sometime when we have new discussion topics that we think you might want to chime in on.
I thought you said we were going to be on every one of them.
Yeah. Where's my money?
Yeah, where's my money?
Your internet monies.
I get $6 an hour, man. I hope...
Well, I heard you typing away. You were working while you were chatting to us.
I typed a little. I may have been going through a FileMaker database of sounds.
I was editing Final Dialogue as we were doing this.
I was looking at pictures of Sarah Palin.
Nobody knows who that is.
Who?
Pipe down. Sarah,
oh,
who?
We do. We know.
No, they know. Sadly, they know.
The truth is out.
All right, that wraps it up. There's just one more thing for me to do, and that's for me to play Lucas Van Tol's awesome tune that he created for the podcast. And I have to mention that Kenneth thinks it's too long, but I disagree, so I'm going to keep it at this length.
Okay.